Hooray, hurrah. Once again, the smartest broopcast in the world takes to the ether here from the salubrious confines of the Porpoise of Fruititude. It's just me and Jennifer on our own, running wild, listening to Ozzy Osbourne and drinking eggnog. Why are we so happy? General Flynn's a felon. Lock him up, lock him up, lock him up all night long. Yeah, the most misogynistic cartoon patriot that ever lived. The hatchet-faced Muppet Eagle from the Muppets. That one. The one whose son is an abomination to nature and mankind. The one who spent all of his time being a horrible, horrible human being to Hillary Clinton and caballing with the Russians. Yes. Convicted felon, baby. And if you don't think it means anything, if you think Russiagate's going away, if you think everyone's making too much of it, if you're, a Trumpy or a Broy or one of those people who thinks that this isn't going to happen, I have news for you. That's right. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. No, it's all happening, baby. The legal system happens whether or not you believe anything that's happening is happening or not. I don't know how much more I can explain it to you. The first thing we have to get straight is there's going to be no more sniveling. This whole it's hard for me and I can't deal with it every day and oh my God, the lies and the obfuscation and the chaos and the stupidity, the malfeasance and the terror. That's what it's like for a lot of people every day all over the world. So we were lucky that it wasn't like that for us for a really long time. I know I was. I'm bathing in white privilege here. In fact, my hands are soaking in it right now, making my nails pliant and soft, letting the shining half moons that are above my cuticles beam as whitely as they can with the lack of melanin that I possess as I glow at my wife across the table in her everlasting glory. And I know that you feel bummed, but honey, we got to get up and go. When this starts to happen, you've heard of the show House of Cards, right? It starred Kevin Spacey, who's now comfortable living as a homosexual alone and with no career after being sought out and caught out as the biggest predatory ning-nang of all time. And he'll be lucky if Netflix jail is the only jail he goes into, if there's any bloody justice in the world. But back to the matter at hand. This administration is up to their Paduskas in an enormous amount of Russia. Not a Malinky bout, but a Harasho amount of Russia. And they're going to go down for it. Will it all happen tomorrow? No. Will it all happen the way you want it to? No. Will everyone get meted out justice? No, you're not going to see Jared Kushner, champagne popsicle, wearing a pink jumpsuit, walking down the highway picking up trash as much as you want to. As much as we want Laverne Cox to be beating him with a Butterfingers bar wrapped in a plastic bag, that's not going to happen. As much as you want to see Don Jr. At the very back of a chained crew building a road in Georgia, I'm afraid justice isn't meted out that metaphorically. You'd have to be Orange 45 to think that there was invisible airplanes and that justice was meted out like it is in the movies. However, when the National Security Advisor, who had been fired from the Obama administration for basically lying in insubordination to Obama, and then Obama awarded Orange 45 off of him and advised him under no circumstances should you put this man in your cabinet, I've recently had to fire him. And of course, no one tells Orange 45 what to do because he listens to his brain, kind of like Tom Petty. She listened to her heart. It's going to tell her what to do. It told her to hire Mike Flynn, and ooh. That didn't fucking work out too hot. So he picked Mike Flynn, and Mike Flynn lied. And really, it's not the traitorism. It's not the treason, as Mike Flynn called it in his exculpatory remarks afterward, his statement. He's the one who mentioned treason. I don't remember hearing treason mentioned. He mentioned it three times in his statement. It's not those things. It's not his savage misogyny or his awful demeanor. Like he's like the angry uncle who's just sworn off alcohol and you're at the 4th of July barbecue and everyone else is tanking up on beer and doing Boilermakers and he's the one who has to flip the steaks for half an hour and then someone doesn't bring him or brings him potato salad with mayonnaise and he likes potato salad with vinegar and he throws a complete nit shit fit and he's wearing plaid shorts and brown loafers with like dark colored socks and he kicks over a chaise lounge and it accidentally pokes out your Irish setter's eye and that only makes him madder instead of being sorry. While the kids are crying, he goes into a flying rage and throws one of those two-pronged forks across the whole place, and it lands in your aunt's handbag and almost hits her, and your uncle gets up, and he's half in the bag now, and he falls over, and a rake hits him in the face. That's who Mike Flynn is. He's the guy who caused all that, with the boiling under anger that's inside. inside of him, like a seismic fucking shock of horror and white, enormous Imperial Roman eagles massing in his brain or whatever's going on in that butterscotch universe. It's not just that. It's he lied and he was caught for the lie. And a career diplomat and a career officer should know the difference between a fudge and what Nixon and Nixon's crew so brilliantly called plausible deniability. If you can get away with the lie, you're going to. We see Orange Friday 5 lie every minute, but that's because it's pathological. What I was getting to was this. It's time to get it up and get it over. You have to join every group you can. You have to march all you can. You have to run for office. You have to do a million things. Not right this second, but later after you listen to the show. Get organized because... we're crushing right now. What about the tax bill? That was the most evil thing that ever happened. It was a bunch of old white people in a room. This is their... Consider it the last few scenes of Jurassic Park before the gift shop gets destroyed. It's a... should you be afraid? Yes. Is Hitlerism evident and abundant? Yes. Are we in the midst of the fascist grip of an illegitimate totalitarian tyrant who wants more power than he actually has right now and seeks to confuse us and create and disturb and sow chaos by weaving a gigantic pattern of lies and everlasting untruths and making us question our very eyes and gaslighting us every second of the day? Yes, I do believe all those things are true. You can also love someone who might have voted for him. I don't say you should go over and snuggle them right now. Those things can all be true.
It's what's not also true? Law yet?
Hmm?
It's not the
right.
Law.
What's as Jennifer just said, the truth is it's not the law. It just passed the Senate. It has to go back to the House, where not to bore you, although I took civics in school. Surprise! We called it civics then. That's how old I am. Why? When did you go to school? I don't know if you remember, Socrates used to hold these ad hoc things. They were outside. He didn't wear shoes, and he was often unbathed, and his wife would come and yell at him at lunchtime, come home for lunch, and he'd be like, shut up, I'm teaching, or whatever. And he never posed any thoughts. He simply asked questions, and that was how Socrates... Anyway, I was young then, and my thighs were burnished with rich auburn hair, and I would use walnut shells, heated walnut shells, to get the hair off of them to make my thighs smooth for the older...
Really?
Yeah. Well, no, that was just when I wanted to emulate the older boys, which I was caught doing. I wasn't osculating them, but I did emulate them. In any case, I took civics, government, as we called it, in junior college. This is in the late 70s. And so we were actually taught out of a book on a blackboard by a person who was an expert in political science. And he taught us exactly how a bill goes through and what happens in the Senate and the Congress. I was also in... why are you giving your bona fides, Greg? I don't know. It's kind of took a detour here. I was in youth and government, as we've discussed, where I was thrown out for smoking marijuana. But the year I was thrown out for smoking marijuana, I want you to know I was a senator that year, just so you know, a state senator. And the amount of state senators that are going to get thrown out. And not for smoking marijuana, my friends. In any case, the House has to match the bill. They can't have two separate bills. That's part of the rules of order. Then it has to go back to the Senate, and then it has to go to the... There's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip, as they say. And you have plenty of time to call everyone on earth at house.gov and senate.gov and make their lives a living hell. And you know what's a good time to call if you can't handle a human interaction? Say you're, 32 and your name's Chad and you've got facial hair and you're wearing a hat. Say you hate human interaction, unless it's with a barista, and then you're going to hassle her all fucking day long, and she's going to be like, look, I have to serve other people. And you're like, well, how much are the cinnamon mints? And you're like, those aren't cinnamon mints, those are chocolate mints. Oh, that has a cinnamon thing. I'm like, look, I know it's Christmas, I've got to go. If you're that guy, call at night. Call when they're not there. There's voicemails. Guess what? Voicemails count as mails. They do. They have to listen to them. If they're doing any due diligence at all, which they're not, of course. But the point is, it's an avalanche. You saw what happened with the ACA. And you saw when we had one moment with John McCain where we thought we could trust him again. Now we know, of course, that we can't and all that. And that's not the biggest bummer to come out of this. What the biggest bummer is that there's been so much goddamn sniveling afterward, like they actually won or something. I wait for a real win before they win. This is, I would say, not a Pyrrhic victory, but certainly an elementary primary victory, as opposed to the General Flynn conviction for a felony, because that's two people, Papadopoulos and Flynn, that have been convicted of felonies so far. Do you understand? The special prosecutor has four people under indictment, two are pleading not guilty to their charges but are under house arrest. The other two pleaded guilty. So that's a pretty big scorecard so far. And no one was closer to the president than Mike Flynn. Let's just put it there. All right, I'll leave all that go. What I want you to do is go to 5Calls and ResistBot. ResistBot is really easy, and you type in your phone, and it tells you who to call. If you don't want to call, you can email. There's FactZero. FactZero will give you 5 emails. All the email addresses of all the senators and congressmen are already there for you, although it needs to be updated. Jeff Sessions is still a senator in that one, and as we know, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is in charge of lying to Adam Schiff at the current juncture. That's his part-time job, is lying to the House Congressional Intelligence Committee. You know, if I had a lawyer, if I was an attorney general, and then I was senator and an attorney general of my state, and then the attorney general of the United States and head of the Department of Justice, the giant legal apparatus, possibly the most extensive legal apparatus that the bureaucracy of the world has ever put together outside of Napoleon's fucking secret police, I might want someone with a better memory, not someone with a recollection of like Tommy Chong. I was told a great story by a comedian named Zane Busby, who's in Up in Smoke. And Tommy had weed on them when they were shooting the movie. And his line in the movie was, "I don't have any weed, man." And the director would go, "Cut, action." And the guy goes, "Do you have any weed?" And he go, "Yeah, I got some Colombian." And they go, "Cut, Tommy. The line is, I don't have any weed." And he go, "Right, right, right. Okay." And then they go, "Action. Back to one. Action. Hey, do you got any weed?" "Yeah, man, I got some mesh McCoy." "Cut." And I said, "You're not, no." And she went, "I'm not kidding," 5 times. He had weed in every pocket, and it was different weed. That makes me laugh. And that's what Jefferson Beauregard Sessions acts like. You remember Huckleberry Hound. What if Huckleberry Hound had just done a bunch of fucking bong rips and then did some dabs or whatever? Because then he'd be like, "Hey, everybody, I can't, you're making me nervous. I can't remember no more." I'm sorry about the Huckleberry Hound incident, and I'm hoping that we can all wash it away in the cleansing rain of the flavor in peach mint as it rolls down upon us. 5Calls, ResistBot. For the women who are listening to the show, thank you for joining me, and I'm sorry about Huckleberry Hound. Runforsomething.net and sheshouldrun.org and emilyslist.org. Run for Something is way more aimed at millennials in general. So I'm encouraging all of you who, I detest labels, but let's call me the stoned uncle, and you'll be the young upstart nephew or niece. If you're in your 30s, early 30s, it's an excellent time to run for office and have a career the rest of your life in city office, state office, and then moving on from there. If you're worried that you're not accomplished enough, if you're worried that you don't know enough about government, if you're worried that you don't keep up on the news enough, look how low the bar is right now nationally. Yeah, there's a few impressive people out there. You turn on the TV and you see Adam Schiff or Barbara Lee or Nadja Velasquez from New York, or Maxine Waters, obviously, or Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, Ted Lieu, Cory Booker. You see these articulate people get out there and lay their case down because they know what they're talking about and they get the shit to back it up. Then you see, oh, I don't know, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions, who holds giant office in this country and was a senator and doesn't seem to know anything about anything. Orange 45, whose grasp of reality, much less facts, is super tenuous. Sarah Huckabee Sanders doesn't hold elected office, but I think you get the general drift when I go in that direction. Right here in California, we have Dana Rohrabacher. Dana Rohrabacher works at Disneyland. He's on a ride called the Shuttle to Russia. And it does is it goes back and forth, and the music, like Prokofiev plays, and there's a snowy field, and all you see are two runners of a sledge and horses, plumes of steam coming up from horses' mouths as their heads toss from side to side as they pull the sledge along. And then he falls off the back of it out of a sack and is given an enormous boodle of rubles, which he stuffs into his pants. And then he gets back on the sledge and makes his way back to the United States. He's been to Russia, golly, more times than Putin. And so we're dealing with people here who are elected officials that aren't really, one, worthy of, some of them don't even belong in jail, they're so low. And two, some of them are so stupid that it's inconceivable that they would have done anything except, go door to door, teach physical education. So be confident about yourself. You can study up. It doesn't take long, for real. You can learn enough to run a small thing, say like, oh, I don't know, a city. Let's see. Run for something, not nap. That's the general, more millennial one. She Should Run is what I'm talking about here. That's a website aimed directly at helping women run for office. And emilyslist.org. Emily's List has an extensive array of resources for you to go to, and start there and talk to your friends about it. I know I keep saying it and all, but I get emails and people say I ran for office or I'm now on the school board. And it's not because I'm making people do this. I'm just trying to stir something inside you. What about you, Greg? I'm busy. I have got shit to do. We're going to New York. We're going to do Nightmare Before Christmas. I gotta go to San Francisco. There's a bag of weed I left up there like a couple years ago. I gotta find that. So I'm busy. No, I don't think it's good. I'm an old white guy. I'm trying to get rid of me in office. That seems like a shitty excuse. I can do my teaching from the saloon. Let me put it that way. Off the sidelines. .org. And then it'll be, of course, stroke, or what is it, /take action/run office. Off the sidelines is also a very useful site. Let's not forget that this week, Orange 45, in his delusional cloud state, said that Puerto Rico was doing really well. It's not. Much is restored. The main source of news that Jennifer swears by and that I find it, he's an ABC reporter named David Begno. And he's at David Begno on Twitter, which is at David and then BEGNAUD. He goes there all the time. He's there quite a lot. He knows what's going on. He doesn't slice it and dice it or spin it very hard. And he doesn't appear to have much malice for either side. He is what you would call, this is the kind of thing that gets you an award in journalism for excellent reporting and also trying to keep the story alive and in front of people. A lot of people forget Puerto Rico is still an issue. Yeah, the amount of people with electricity is over 90% now, is my understanding. But the amount of people with water is shockingly low.
It varies, too.
It varies from place to place. Here we go. This is what David Begno said on November 30th. Thursday in Puerto Rico, 71 days after Maria, status reports 66% power generation. 93% of people have water. So I was wrong. It was only 2/3 of the people have power.
It varies day to day.
983 survivors remain in 42 shelters, and the official death toll is 58, which is far too many. And that's sure to rise. You can go to Jose Andres does a fantastic charity called worldcentralkitchen.org, worldcentralkitchen.org. They're providing tens of thousands of meals. On Thanksgiving, they did, 30,000, was it? And then charitynavigator.org has an excellent page with highly rated, about 5 or 6 highly rated Puerto Rican relief organizations, ones that do water. Yes, some of them are Christian. I know. Look at me. But Charity Navigator really sources the things and goes through to make sure that all the money's getting to where it's supposed to be getting to, and that's how they rate everything. Hannah Arendt, the woman who presciently coined the phrase, the banality of evil, about the Nazis during World War II because of their predilection, like the Romans, the Chinese of the Middle Ages, bureaucracy. Their torture, their devastation, their genocide that they committed, all of the cultures I'm talking about and ours are run by petty bureaucrats. In any case, Hannah Arendt had a quote that I read in an article this week, and I'm just pulling it out without attributing it to the article. Hannah Arendt said, and this is, I think, what applies to right now and how everybody's feeling so confused. If everybody always lies to you, the consequence is not that you believe the lies, but rather that nobody believes anything any longer. And that's what happens to reality when it gets stripped away. What's that line in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead by Tom Stoppard? A horse runs by with an arrow in its head. Someone says, look, there's a unicorn. And then people keep adding to the lie until it becomes as thin as reality. And that's how I feel the piling on is. Today, Orange 45 was at a business conference. And he said, after looking at the numbers, I'm a shoo-in for 2020. meaning the economy is doing so well. By the way, in the article in SF Gate, it said no one could figure out which numbers he was alluding to. There are no numbers. So this is what I mean about believing lies. It's not that what he said is a lie. It is a lie. It's that he made up his own reality, which is there's some sort of numbers that he saw somewhere. And those numbers indicate to him that he cannot lose the presidential election in 2020. This is what he's telling a group of business people who know what business indicators are. They know that because of Obama, we're still on his numbers almost. We've just gone on to the next quarter, right? His economy. If there was anything that was done, it was saving the world from the incredible dumpster fire of 2008, which Obama did by pouring money into the economy and the banks. What you see them doing with the tax cut and what you see him doing with his fuckery is stripping the economy of what it needs, which is when the economy is good like this, you don't really want to cut all the taxes. It's just a terrible time to do that. Speaking of things that are nobody believes anything any longer, this is in the New York Times this afternoon. It's Saturday when we're recording this here at the Porpoise. K.T. McFarlane was called General Flynn's brain in the administration. She's a broadcaster. She's also an administrator. And she was in the Trump administration as his assistant, Secretary Flynn at the time. And this is what she said in an email that the New York Times came upon today. If there is a tit-for-tat escalation, Trump will have difficulty in improving relations with Russia, which has just thrown USA election to him. Now, if you wanted to state it any more plain, I have a gun. It's in my coat pocket. You know, I'm reading the note right now. There's a Russian behind me. He's very big. He wants your country. So there's a million ways to fudge this. And of course, the White House already has. The White House said, let's see here. This is the New York Times. It is not clear whether Ms. McFarlane was saying she believed the election had been thrown. In fact, been thrown. A White House lawyer said on Friday that she meant only that the Democrats were portraying it that way. I'll read you the sentence again. If there's a tit-for-tat escalation, Trump will have difficulty improving relations with Russia, which has just thrown USA election to him. Russia, which has just thrown USA election to him. The grammar's a little rugged, but you get the idea. It's evident from the emails, which were obtained from someone who had access to transition team communications. That would be one of your leakers. This is a rickety little boat that they're riding in. It's certainly a little tiny tugboat with lots of leaks in the roof, because who would barf that up information up? And where were you 10 months ago? It wouldn't have mattered then. We're going to talk about that. What wouldn't have mattered 10 months ago was if the truth had actually been screamed from the rooftops, because it was. It was just that an older woman was saying it calmly in front of you in a suit, so you didn't hear it. It's not clear whether Ms. McFarlane was saying, let's see here. After learning that President Barack Obama would expel 35 Russian diplomats, we remember that fell day, and he didn't do it, the Trump team quickly strategized about how to reassure Russia. I'm not going to go into the whole enchilada. You can read it at your leisure, and you know exactly what I'm talking about anyway. But I don't want you to get caught in a marooned and a blizzard of lies, as Dave Frischberg once said. The lies will pile up around you, and that horrible line from Apocalypse Now. Who was it? Michael Hare who did the punch up? No, it was John Milius. Didn't John Milius do the voiceover for Apocalypse Now?
Yes.
The line is, what is it? Martin Sheen goes, man, the bullshit piled up so fast around here, you needed wings to stay above it. Which I always thought was a really poor metaphor. Why would you want wings to stay above bullshit? But it's a line that stuck with me all these years. And that's how it is with these people. There is a straight up fact in an email. And as Jennifer pointed out to me just this afternoon, before this recording commenced, wouldn't it be ironic if a telltale email was what was the undoing of the Scambino crime family's web of terror and epic crime wave across Chicago that they've been perpetrating on us? Hillary Warned Us is a Twitter site. And by the way, if you're bored with me talking about how the election was rigged, or you're bored with me talking about Hillary or whatever, you are so, so welcome that this is free. It's so free. And I change the subject a lot, so soon we'll probably talk about something else. Why am I relitigating it? Because it's the most important thing that's ever happened in politics in my lifetime. What about Richard Nixon? And what about the Vietnam War? And what about the Kennedy assassination? And what about JFK? And what about the corruption of the Reagan administration? And what about the illegal invasion of Central America? All of those things were as terrible as what's going on right now, which is why you need to know that's why I know that this will be over one day and that things will be different at the end of it, because all of these things have happened in my lifetime. John F. Kennedy killed, Malcolm X killed, Martin Luther King killed, Robert Kennedy killed, George Wallace shot, Reagan shot, Ford shot twice, shot at twice. Gandhi shot down, Anwar Sadat shot down, Menachem, was it Begin?
Rabin.
Yitzhak Rabin shot down. All these things have happened, and things still moved forward. We're still talking about things like people's rights and medical care. If we weren't talking about them anymore, which is kind of the game plan here, they want you to think that all those things are entitlements that we should shut up about, but you notice no one shut up about them. So that's where you have to lift your head, walk in the sun. Who was it? Eddie? What was his name? Eddie something, the old philosopher. You'll never walk alone. You'll never give up the ship. We're going to make it. You've heard me talk of the amazing shave I get from my Dollar Shave Club razor, especially when I use it with their Dr. Carver shave butter. Well, I'm here to tell you I'm never going to give up my membership. In fact, I'm adding even more DSC products to my daily routine. Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, everything you need. They have me looking and feeling amazing. And it's all their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients and they deliver it to you, just like they do their razors. That means no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down aisles, looking at shelf upon shelf of what the hell is that and what do I do with it? I use Dollar Shave Club for just about everything. They've got me covered head to toe. And with gift memberships and e-gift cards available, DSC can help cover the names on your holiday shopping list too. I want you to love Dollar Shave Club as much as I do, so I've arranged for you to try your first month of their best razor, along with travel-size versions of shave butter, body cleanser, and yes, even booty wipes. For just $5. After that, replacement cartridges ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the DSC Starter Set. Get yours for just $5. Available at dollarshaveclub.com/smartest. That's dollarshaveclub.com/smartest. Hillary warned us, is a site on Twitter that I like. Why are you referring to it? It's not even about Hillary at the outset, and then it becomes about Hillary. This is a glorious week in male predators being struck down, because we got three giant cultural ones on the scoreboard here. From the esoteric world of theater, we've got Israel Horovitz. From the green pastures of the halcyon days of the buttermilk clouds of white people's false memories about what America was and once was, literally and imaginatively and musically, Garrison Keillor. And then, of course, the punishing brutality that is morning television. The hideous, obsequious equivalences of between politics and making pudding, that morning television reduces everything to that vast crater of bright colors. And some people are excellent at morning television. Some people you turn on and you're like, oh, you're so funny, you're so smooth, and you make me feel happy. Then there was a man who rose from the depths, once upon a time a brunette, and as the Olympics wore on and his gaze fell on the thighs of every subtle gymnast that twinkled past him and every skater that was from Belarus, his hair began to recede and his ego began to grow and his arch began to confabulate. And he began to feel that he was impervious to the rules that are bind other men to civilized behavior in an office on this earth. Of course, I'm talking about Matt Lauer, the man that when you turn the TV on in the morning, if he was on, you're like, really? And then you put some whiskey in your coffee because it was going to be that way. He turned out to be exactly what he seemed like he was. I don't know if it's a... I wouldn't say it's a surprise. I'd say it was a delightful moment of TV comeuppance for someone that really deserves some TV comeuppance. He'd been consistently dismissive, snotty, insinuating, harsh, overtly flirty, sort of grossly dudish, but in a way where he kind of thought he was getting the joke over on you. Every woman in the world knows a dude like this. A gimlet-eyed short dude who comes at you trying to bring a lot of noise. And you're like, if you weren't my boss, I wouldn't even be talking to you. And then in his case, if you weren't my boss, I wouldn't be forced to perform unspeakable acts because of the fucking leverage of your power. And let's be real honest, Andrew Lack at NBC and Zuckerman before him at NBC have a lot to answer for. This is a 20-year pattern that they both said this week in the press. They had no recollection of there ever being a complaint lodged against him up until this week. That's highly unlikely. It's as likely as K.T. McFarlane expressing the Democrats' need to collude with the Russians. It's as likely as me buying uranium, which I do quite often. Hillary has a station wagon that she pulls up in our neighborhood, and we buy little bricks of it out of the back. The thing is, one of them lasts you, fuck, I don't know, 5,000 years for half-life. The reason I pick on Matt Lauer is he was creepy. Two, he creeped on that Olympic athlete in Sochi the last time. He wouldn't leave off about Anne Hathaway because she'd accidentally had an upskirt a few days before, and he opened with it, and then he carried on about it. And what really hashes me off about it was that he goes, so what's the lesson learned? You see, she had to learn a lesson because a guy stuck a camera between her legs. And why didn't he just not take that picture is a real question that might be asked. Why is men's prerogative always come first? And why do men always have men's back about exerting their male prerogative? I.e., Matt Lauer had a buzzer on his desk that he could push and it would lock the door from the inside. The imagination runs riot, and not in a lot of savory ways. It is, I'm led to understand from having read about it, subsequent to finding out about this inconceivable breach of human protocol, that it's common and has been in a lot of people's offices for a long time. One, it keeps out prying eyes when you're having your way with the staff, the female staff. Two, it keeps people from coming in when you're doing something unspeakably vile, like having a shit fit or doing drugs or whatever it is you're going to be doing. Why do you go to the worst part? Why couldn't it just be that he's making some hard calls? He was on the Today Show, you guys. What were the hard calls? I remember that he went to Morocco once and they did like a couscous for him, and they made it with chicken instead of pigeon. They made him a bastilla because they were like, oh, you're from America, so we didn't put pigeon in it. And I thought, well, if you were a good old sport, you'd eat the bloody pigeon. And go, I'm in Morocco, I'm eating a pigeon, get off my thing. I mean, he did the Olympics. He got to go to Brazil. What didn't he do? He didn't have red eye during the Sochi Olympics. That was Bob Costas, and his eye will live forever as unbelievable remonstrance of all of us. That was like the red eye of Sauron. It judged us, and it let us know that Mordor was on fire. Matt Lauer abused his position to take advantage of women, and it's unspeakable. And moreover, his bosses really need to come to heel, too. But it was great to see him dumped and with no golden parachute. This is what the business world is like. The business world has H&R. The business world has giant rules etched in marble that they have to observe immediately. Why did they not observe them for 20 years? Because they didn't have to up till now. The pressure wasn't there. Now the pressure's there. It's also, I think, finally, it's getting through people's thick skulls. By people, I mean men. That all of this counts in large amounts, and that we've been ignoring a problem that's been right under our noses since the beginning of mankind. Yeah. And that's that women are hassled all the time by the Matt Lauers of the world and sub-Matt Lauers of the world and super-Matt Lauers of the world, the ones with even more power. On a day-to-day basis, boils down to not wanting to walk down the side of the street where the guys are building or whatever so they don't say something about your body, or not going to a particular aisle in the supermarket because that guy's always on you when you get on that aisle, or not wanting to go to a certain gym or mall or whatever because you know there's creepy dudes there, or not wanting to eat at a certain place because there's been a bad experience. You get the idea. And then, getting to go to work and all your coworkers, and some of them can be inappropriate all the bloody time, and sometimes the boss isn't understanding about that when you complain and is like, well, you shouldn't wear a top like that. Or it's your fault, basically. Women's sexuality is this unbelievable sizzling bundle that's been given to the world, and women have almost no other responsibilities than to control that, to keep men from attacking them. And that's how he seemed to approach the world. Most of all, Hillary talks about it in her book, What Happened, the military debate, or whatever they called it, that was on NBC, they tossed around names to host it, and Chris Matthews came up. Now, I think Chris Matthews is an interesting person, a blowhard to be sure, and he interrupts people far too much for my taste, whereas I just bowl people over because I never shut up. There's a big difference. Think about it. It's subtle. Would have been a perfect host in so much as he had interviewed both Orange 45 and Hillary with some success. He got, if you recall, Orange 45 to admit that he felt women should be punished for having an abortion. That was Chris Matthews, of all people, who went, "So you think there should be some form of punishment?" And Orange 45 went, "Yes, I do." And so that was a pretty wild thing early in the campaign. And when he spoke with Hillary, he listened. He didn't interrupt. And he seemed to take on board the things she was talking about, because Chris Matthews has one capacity, and that's his ability to understand a little bit of complex policy now and again, because he's 70 years old. There, I've said it. He went through the 70s. We had to listen to long, boring things at one point. I know this seems old and stupid to you, but there was a time when we actually had to know what plans were for things and what giant things were going to happen. Not all of us knew the blueprints of everything. I'm just saying, we got to do a thing until there's things and it's bad. It wasn't like that even, a year ago. We actually had long drawn out discussions about policy, like the Affordable Care Act or the bill to allow gay people to get married or the treaty with Iran, all of which were hashed over for years and years and years by a dazzling variety of experts who brought expertise, logic, and calm legal minds to the matter. That's what's disappeared. And that's why you feel like the rug's come out from under you partially, I think. Matt Lauer at the military debate laid a trap for her, set her up for an email question, hit her with the email question, wouldn't let her get off that, then told her to answer a policy question quickly if you can. At the same time, he never ever closed on Orange 45, who dissimulated and lied, basically prevaricated, as he always does. His opinion on everything was misrepresented. He was never chased down for that. We really got a good old boys club out of Matt that night, and a big, big frosty taste of his misogyny. And as you know, it was well reported at the time. And then he went on to do the Olympics to some not great aplomb. And I just combined the words aplomb and acclaim and came up with the word aplomb. In any case, why am I going on and on about this? Hillary warned us. Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, Jordan Cheriton from the Young Turks, Sam Chris from Vice TV, Hamilton Fish and Leon Weisler from the New Republic, Mark Halperin and Glenn Thrush, all of whom are not at their posts anymore. Glenn Thrush was with the New York Times and Politico. Halperin was with MSNBC and Bloomberg, and before that, ABC, and wrote the book about Hillary's campaign in 2008 called Game Changer, and led the narrative on her being shrill and unpleasant. Hillary warned us, tweeted, "All of them negatively shaped the narratives about Hillary, all sexual harassers." Mm-hmm. To a person. What does that say to you? Now, if you think I'm coloring all men with the same brush, how many women have to come forward? How many had, public intercourse in the press with her? All of these men did, and all of them went out of their way to make sure you knew they thought she was too smart for the room, too sassy for the room, not grateful enough. All the things that we hear when Orange 45 talks to black people, particularly black women, but black people in general, and specifically black athletes, he's always real serious that they're not weepingly grateful enough to be in the land of plenty the way he's given them the opportunity to, even though at no point in his life has he stood for anything other than plundering people of color and mistreating them. So every single person on this list is someone who doesn't think much of women in their regular life. And by their regular life, I mean Charlie Rose, we know for a fact, would invite women on his staff to his house for a meeting, and then go in the shower and then come out. with all of his thing out. And that there's nothing more disgusting, inappropriate, or horrible in your life. And for those of you who are like, well, you could just leave. Have you ever been with your boss when your boss was taller and bigger than you and came out with their genitalia waving at you? And your reaction was supposed to be one of unbelievable sexual chargedness instead of, oh my God, this is the worst thing that's ever happened in my life. A 70-year-old man has just come out of the shower waving his weenie at me, and he really expects me to do something because he's senior to me at the firm. That's what it boils down to. Jordan Sheraton hassled women ceaselessly. Sam Chris, Mark Halperin made women who were interns sit on his lap and he rubbed his. And Glenn Thresh in his fine texting. Sexual harassment takes a lot of forms. It's not just what Matt Lauer did, which is, I mean, several women have come forward and purported that he had sex with them in his office, which is unbelievable. And vilely unreckoning. Jill Philippic wrote several really awesome columns this week, about these very topics. First, she was talking about the Today Show and said, talking about Savannah Guthrie, her pain in not seeing a beloved colleague go down, but of being blind to the worst sides of him, of not seeing the pain he was causing others in their shared workspace. It's a moment of reckoning, not just with the behavior of another, but with oneself. Why didn't I see? What else am I missing? These are the conversations we need to have. That's what I'm talking about. Why aren't you seeing what's in front of you? If you see men hassling women, if you work in a place where guys hassle women, if you're around the locker room talking, it's not cool. This is the time. But more than that, stand up for the women in your workplace, in your classroom, that you know, in your life. Most people who do terrible things don't present themselves as monsters. Yeah, that's changing too, we find out. Least of all those whose terribleness can seem pretty banal in a deeply misogynistic society, where the overwhelming majority of women have been subject to some kind of sexism. We must be able to hold these two things simultaneously. I can love, like, or admire a man, the same man that may have done something awful, and should be held accountable for it. Until we're able to see this reality, men will continue to be able to behave badly, and they will be excused because someone else says they're a gentleman or a nice guy or a respectable father. And then this is from another piece she wrote. This one's for the New York Times. The other one was from The Guardian. Matt Lauer, like Charlie Rose and Mark Halperin, is a journalist out of a job after his employer fired him for sexually harassing female colleagues. It's good news that real penalties are now levied on men who harass, after centuries of the costs mostly befalling the women who endure harassment. But the deep cultural rot that has corroded nearly all of our institutions in every corner of our culture is not just about a few badly behaved men. Sexual harassment and the sexism it's predicated on involves more than the harassers and the harassed. When the harassers are men with loud microphones, their private misogyny has wide-reaching public consequences. One of the most significant, the 2016 election. A pervasive theme of all these men's coverage, Glenn Thresh, Mark Halperin, Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, was Mrs. Clinton was dishonest and unlikable. These recent harassment allegations suggest that perhaps the problem wasn't that Mrs. Clinton was untruthful or inherently hard to connect with, but that these particular men hold deep biases against women who seek power instead of sticking to acquiescent sex object status. A month ago, Rebecca Traister wrote in New York Magazine, "We see that the men who have had power to abuse women's bodies and psyches throughout their careers are in many cases the ones in charge of our political and cultural stories." With Lauer, the observation has come into sharper focus, and Hillary Clinton's loss. The 2016 presidential race was so close that any of a half dozen factors surely influenced the outcome. This is Jill Philippic Stahl. James Comey, racial politics, Clinton family baggage, the contentious Democratic primary, third party spoilers, Russian interference, fake news. But when one of the best qualified for candidates for the presidency in American history and the first woman to get close to the Oval Office loses to an opponent who'd not dedicated a nanosecond of his life to public service and ran a blatantly misogynistic campaign, it's hard to conclude that gender didn't play a role. I mean, wow. She puts it pretty plain there. And everything moves slowly. Jennifer said today, this country moves slowly. Democracy moves slowly. It's taken 10 months. Everybody said it at the time. We all said it before. It needs to be said again now, in light of the way everybody feels now. We all feel a little bit differently. There has been too much and an avalanche of famous people, many of whom were admired, many of whom were fucking famous and had a lot to say. And it's going to carry on. We know that. It's an avalanche now. And hopefully the genie's out of the bottle and we're going to carry on up the ladder, which is what I would like to see. For me, so far, it's been excellent. But I think behind every one of the men I've mentioned so far, there's higher up people who control the industry they're in. And they're abetting this. And probably doing things on their own as well. And we haven't even talked about, the people that are in plain sight, like R. Kelly and Bill Cosby, you know. Let's see here. The latest harassment and assault allegations complicate that account and suggest that many of the high-profile media men covering Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump, now you know it's in the New York Times, were the ones leading with their genitals. Mr. Trump was notoriously accused of multiple acts of sexual harassment and assault and was caught on tape bragging about his proclivity for grabbing women, that several of the men covering the race, shaping the way American voters understood the candidates and what was at stake, were apparently behaving in similarly appalling ways off camera, calls into question not just their objectivity, but also their ability to cover the story with the seriousness and urgency it demanded. Sexual harassment at the hands of political journalists, who also pulls back the curtain on how too many of these men view women generally. The journalists in question are accused of a range of behaviors, some more serious than others, from drunken unsolicited kisses to, in Mr. Lauer's case, sexual assault, in addition to exposing himself to a colleague and sending another a sex toy with a note detailing how he would like to use it on her. The theme running through nearly all the complaints is a man in a position of power who saw the women around him not as competent colleagues or even as sovereign human beings, but as sexual objects he could either proposition to boost his ego or humiliate to feed a desire for domination. It's hard to look at these men's coverage of Mrs. Clinton and not see glimmers of that same simmering disrespect and impulse to keep women in a subordinate place. When men turn some women into sexual objects, the women who are inside of that box are one-dimensional, while those outside of it become disposable. The ones who refuse to be disposed of, who continue to insist on being seen and heard, are inconvenient and pitiable at best, deceitful shrews and crazy harpies at worst. That's exactly how Mr. Lauer, Mr. Halperin, Mr. Rose, and Mr. Thrush often treated Mrs. Clinton. This moment isn't about a nation of confused men. It's about a minority of men who choose to treat women alternately as walking sex objects or bothersome and potentially devious nags. It's about a majority of Americans who give men a pass for all manner of bad behavior because they assume men are entitled to behave badly, but women are held to an entirely different standard. That's why it's so egregious that sexual harassers set the tone of much of the coverage of the woman who hoped to become the first female president. These crooked Hillary narratives, pushed by Mr. Lauer, Mr. Halperin, and a long list of other prominent journalists and pundits, indelibly shaped the election and were themselves gendered. Hillary Clinton is a cackling witch. Hillary Clinton is a woman that was easy to distrust because she was also a woman seeking power. And what kind of woman does that? Mr. Trump emphasized this character as part of his more broadly sexist campaign, but he didn't invent it, nor was he the only famous man going on television to perpetuate it while revealing a deep disdain for women when the cameras weren't rolling. Jill Philippic wrote The H-Spot, The Feminist Pursuit of Happiness, and you should read her. I couldn't resist reading you all of that because I thought it was brilliantly put. And I've been trying to think about how I wanted to put it. And I think that she hits the nail exactly on the head. Nine women accuse Israel Horovitz, playwright and mentor, of sexual misconduct. Israel Horovitz is a playwright and a longtime teacher, and he betrayed a lot of women. The important part of all of this is that Adam Horovitz, his son from the Beastie Boys, the first thing he said was, "I believe the allegations against my father are true." He didn't say, "He's a great guy, he was a great dad, I really love him, these women are liars," all the things you're hearing from Roy Moore.
He said, "I believe the women.
I believe the allegations against my father are true." It's beautiful to see someone stick up for women, especially against their own father. And he's a pretty august playwright. I did a couple of his plays in college. He was quite popular. I would say 30... I don't know. He's always been popular. He's a teacher as well. But the important part is, I think this is part of what's changing, is that people's attitude. When you see what's going on with Roy Moore, it's quite upsetting because It's difficult to understand how people can set aside one set of moral pickets and charge past them and embrace another set of moral guidelines that don't seem to have any bearing on the ones that to us appear more heinous than you could possibly imagine. Someone that cruises malls for girls that are 14 years old or picks up 14-year-olds at custody hearings and things like that seems like a what we might call a predator of the highest caliber and someone that might be registered with the local police, as opposed to being a lawman and then later go on to fame as a beleaguered racist and a tremendous proponent of biblical values. And by biblical values, I mean insisting that the Ten Commandments be left in a public place when the edict had come down that he mustn't do that anymore, and he defied that edict because his value he places on two papier-mâché replicas of the Ten Commandments are more important than your or my life. So, just to get an idea of where he's going, his constituents don't look at it that way, and the people that support him in Alabama, I don't purport to be inside their head, but I will tell you this. There's another agenda there, and it has nothing to do with whether he did or did anything to women. That is irrelevant to them in that instance. They're willing to let that one scooch by so they can get to the bigger overriding picture, which is they don't want their world rocked by people of other colors or persuasions. And it's that bigotry that's informing this campaign, which is making it so frustrating for all of us to watch it. Of course, you can give to Roy Moore, and I assure you, if you do, you can give to Roy Moore, and I assure you, if you do, you'll have many friends there, and you'll be able to talk about a dazzling variety of subjects, like how to build a deck, and how to fix your rascal, and how not to confuse pills and jars, because, you know, one day's the blue ones, and all those kind of things. But also, if you give money to Doug Jones, I assure you, you'll never be alone again. You'll never be lonely. Doug Jones is a very enthusiastic candidate, and he needs to win. He really does. If he doesn't, though, I don't want everyone to fucking panic and go into some kind of tailspin. Didn't Danica Rame and the entire gay LGBTQ board of supervisors, a city council of Palm Springs, didn't the black mayor of New Orleans, didn't none of this lift your spirits and hip you to the fact that everybody got organized in 10 months and this giant agenda got pulled in this last round of elections and that we're only less than a year away from the next round and we have a whole year to stop the gerrymandering and to file court cases and to get people registered, and that the sheer numbers of us and the new candidates like Danica Rame can do this. It can be done. And it can be done in small towns because small towns don't have that giant, you know, plurality to deal with where there's huge blocks of people. We were from San Francisco, Jennifer and I. Well, we still are. Well, we were, but we still are. And it was breaking down comparative politics in San Francisco in the olden days, in the 80s and 90s, was, you know, there wasn't the tech boom then. It hadn't quite started. So there was old rich people, and they lived in one area. There were gay people, and they lived everywhere, but they had a neighborhood. There were Chinese people, Japanese people, Cambodian people, Korean people, Honduran people, El Salvadorian people, Filipino people, to be sure. Everybody, black people, and yuppies, and then punks, poor, working collar, blue collar, white people. They had their, you know, the city was really divided into duchies. But geographically, what made it so exciting was if you crossed it in a bus or walking, you could cross all 12 of those municipalities in an hour's time. You could rub shoulders with financial types who really were dealing for zillions of dollars, because San Francisco's always been a giant money-funneling, corrupt-ass, political backhanded place.
Bank of America.
The Bank of America, who tried to revoke all their gay marriage. Well, anyway, in any case, but when you're in a small town and there's several thousand people, isn't that where you always see, for instance, the gentleman from Somalia was elected in Montana, was it? And you see wild things happen in smaller towns where you're able to get someone through because and this is what we all talk about as Americans, and I hear it so much I want to scream, you shouldn't judge people by who they are, but by their merits. And that it's almost impossible to do on a national level. On a national level, we're talking about a hagiograph that you put forward of yourself, or now a bizarre cartoony head like the Wizard of Oz. That's what happened in the last election. I hate women, and I hate Mexicans, and I hate everybody, and I hate what you hate. I hate what you hate, and I love my gun, and I love, you know, and if you like me, oh, we're going to get them. We were going to put people in jail, which, of course, is fantastically, almost ironic at this point. There's been very few felony convictions on the Hillary Clinton side in the last year. So, why are you bringing this up? And the Roy Moore, Doug Jones election. Jennifer sent me this article from right over there. I'm pointing toward it. You can't see it. It's from Dothan City Jail, which is a name I always laugh at. I know a comedian from Atlanta named Greg Ray. Worked with him, oh golly, 100 years ago. I saw him again a few years ago in Athens at a gig. And Greg Ray used to do a bit where he'd go, what was it? Elvis is working at a filling station in Dothan, Alabama. I just always remember Dothan, Alabama. Pastor Ken of Glasgow helps Dothan City Jail inmate Spencer Trock fill out a voter registration form inside a jail in June. There's a photograph of a minister, a pastor, helping an inmate. Connor Sheets, oh, the South has the best names. The byline of the Alabama.com, Connor Sheets. Thousands of felons across Alabama have registered to vote in recent weeks, according to Pastor Kenneth Glasgow, who's heading up a statewide effort to get felons to the voting booths. His goal is to get as many felons possible signed up to vote before the end of the day Monday. Well, it's coming Monday. The deadline to be able to cast a ballot in Alabama's December 12th Senate special election. Convicted felons are being registered to vote in Alabama jails and prisons. In the last month, I think we've registered at least 5,000 to 10,000 people all over the state. Glasgow, president of Dothan's The Ordinary People Society, TOPS advocacy group, said Monday, I've got people all over the state, Tuscaloosa, Birmingham, Montgomery, Enterprise, Dothan, Abbeville. For generations, most Alabamians, I love that they're Alabamians, like, oh, Susanna, don't you cry for me. Because I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee. I'm going to California, my true love for to see. For generations, most Alabamians, by the way, there's some great Americans from Alabama. Alabama, like everywhere.
Willie Mays.
Yeah, don't even start. Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, and Willie McCovey are all from Alabama. Yeah, Willie Mays and Henry Aaron and Willie McCovey. Yeah, a lot of my starters on my all-time team are... Hank is from Mobile, and McCovey's from Mobile, and Willie Mays from outside Birmingham. Satchel Paige is from Mobile. So, yeah, I'm gonna cheer up here. For generations, most Alabamians convicted of a felony were barred from ever voting in the state again. But the definition of moral turpitude act, moral turpitude, by the way, fantastic. If I was Ambrose Bierce, I would define moral turpitude as acts that people of the non-leisure class commit to lose their rights. You have to be rich to not commit moral turpitude. In other words, what Roy Moore did isn't moral turpitude, but what anyone who with no money and no money to get a counsel. A new law passed by the state legislature, signed by Governor Kay Ivey. Kay Ivey. Poor decisions, Kay. Cleared the way for thousands of felons to restore their voting rights. The law lists several dozen felony convictions that are considered crimes of moral turpitude, which means anyone convicted of them loses the right to vote. Other felons are now eligible to restore that right. Previously, the list of crimes that some considered to be moral turpitude were not clearly defined, and many felons simply believe they could never regain the franchise. Another item. Black voters could sway Alabama Senate race rocked by scandal. The volatile Alabama Senate race has generated national headlines with allegations of sexual misconduct by the Republican candidate Roy Moore. Another key voting bloc. African Americans' participation in the December 12th election will be crucial if the Democratic candidate Doug Jones is to have a chance. Democrats haven't won a statewide race since 2008. This is the line I want you to hear. Some worry that black voters who make up more than half of the Democratic electorate are not sufficiently engaged 2 weeks before the election. Mr. Jones' potential and potential problems are evident in Selma, famous for its role in the civil rights struggles. The region is a prime target for Democratic get-out-the-vote efforts. Cynthia Pettaway, the chairman of the Dallas County Democratic Party, said the allegations of sexual misconduct against Mr. Moore had heightened awareness of the race among her fellow black voters, particularly women. What I'm finding is that women are not taking it lightly, because I'm finding there are more women who have been sexually harassed or molested than people realize. That's from the Alabama Papers. That's right, it's Ozzy again. I made a statement at the Bell House a week or two ago that I had heard from a rock friend that Ozzy didn't always sing his vocals on stage. And I got a letter. My email is fanmailforgreg@gmail.com. And yes, I read them all. I'm sorry if I haven't answered you yet. Ted wrote me and sent me an article from the LA Weekly, which is another kettle of fish. The LA Weekly was bought this week by a mystery owner and the entire staff fired. They're desiccating LA journalism here. Between the LAist being taken apart by the Ricketts family and this bizarre move this week. And the LA Weekly actually pleaded on its pages, who owns us? Who is the owner of the LA Weekly? That's the scary fascist part of what's going on right now. The good part is we're still communicating, you and I. Ted wrote me about Ozzy being doubled on vocals live in concert. Apparently it's a somewhat known thing. And he sent me this article, and it says this. It looked like a big black tent. Offstage right and behind the bass bin speakers in a Stockholm arena, Ozzy Osbourne's crew had set up a portable vocal booth. Inside the black curtain was a microphone and stand, a floor wedge monitor, and a comm to communicate directly with the sound engineer. The booth also contained a video monitor scrolling lyrics to Osbourne's metallic solo hits like Crazy Train. 2 weeks earlier, Robert Mason came home to his Tempe, Arizona apartment to find a message on his answering machine from Osbourne's wife and hard-nosed manager Sharon Osbourne. It went something like, "We want to know if you'd be interested in doing live vocals on tour, background harmonies, and that kind of stuff. Call me back." Who could turn the call down? I'm with him. It was 95, so he went on the road with him. He said he doesn't remember being told before that whether he'd actually be doing his singing offstage or onstage. He came on and sang out a song with Ozzy, and Ozzy gave him two thumbs up and said, "Okay, you're in." And from then on, I was gone for the next 11 months offstage. So apparently lots of groups do it. There's a whole bunch of groups mentioned here. David Lee Roth's group, fantastically. Kiss, whatnot. I think every group in the world does it. So I wasn't trying to be mean to Ozzy about it. I guess is my point here. I dig Ozzy as much as the next stone teenager, and I feel that Ozzy's the perfect accompaniment to this last story, the headline of which is this, and Jennifer sent me this today. Possum breaks into liquor store and gets drunk as a skunk. Yeah, that's headline writing. This is the Associated Press. Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Where else would it be? A possum that apparently drank bourbon after breaking into a Florida liquor store sobered up at a wildlife rescue center and was released unharmed. Oh, thank goodness. Emerald Coast Wildlife Refuge officials said the possum was brought in by a Fort Walton Beach, Florida police officer. A liquor store employee found the animal next to a broken and empty bottle of bourbon. The possum knew that midnight was calling. A worker found the possum on a shelf next to a cracked open bottle of liquor with nothing in it. She definitely wasn't fully acting normal. Pettis told the Northwest Florida Daily News, the female possum appeared disoriented, was excessively salivating, and was pale. And then it asked to go to Fatburger. Has the possum had to go to the Waffle House? Staff pumped the mammal, marsupial, full of fluids and cared for her as she sobered up. We loaded her up with fluids to help flush out any alcohol toxins. She was good a couple of days later. Pettis says the possum did not appear to have a hangover. Now, I've never made this call before, but I dare you, those out there, and as I've discussed, and Stephanie Miller's favorite joke of mine, the possum is the most duplicitous of all the marsupials. You can trust a wallaby. You can confide in a numbat. You can befriend a bilby. You can snuggle with a wombat. You can do. I've seen it happen. I've seen Jennifer snuggle a wombat. River was that wombat's name. But you can't trust a possum. Why? Because they'll shit in your fucking yard and you can never clean it up. One, two, they act dead. They're not dead. It's acting dead. And it's giving you the eye, that weird gimlet prehistoric eye. All right, their babies are cute. Their babies are super cute. That doesn't change the fact that of all the countries in Country Bear Jamboree, they're the scariest. First of all, the possum did not appear to have a hangover. Whoever got to write this story, this was the high point of their year so far. The store owner's name, and this is why we love the South, Cashmore. Yes, the owner of the store was named Cashmore because he accepts only checks. Yes, I don't know how this... I don't even know what I'm listening to now. I have no control over the music. How did this come on? Wow. High school, anyone?
Listening to you, I saw him again!
To turn my heart away. Cashmore said he never had a possum and break in before. Really? What do you usually get? Tree frogs and whatnot? What comes down in Fort Walton? Dolphin coming up to the... She came in from the outside and was up in the rafters. And then she came through. She knocked a bottle of liquor off the shelf. When she got down on the floor, she drank the whole damn bottle. But it just goes to show, and I don't know what Cashmore sounds like, but I think he should sound like this. She drank the whole damn bottle, and then it just goes to show that even the animals are impressed with caches. The animal was released Thursday. You're released now. You've been the smartest crowd in the world. I've been the smartest man in the world. I'll see you in New York at Nightmare Before Christmas at the Barclays Center on the 6th and 7th. And then we'll see you in San Francisco. I love you.